music from Margaret Becker. How can I keep from singing? 10.5 minutes past the hour. It is a Tuesday morning, and of course that means our weekly conversation with Dr. Don Clark. Don, a member of the board at Creation Moments, and a biochemist in his own right. And he knows about scientific stuff, and we talk about scientific stuff and not so scientific stuff too. We talk about, well, your wine growing is scientific though, isn't it? That your biochemistry works in that, doesn't it?
Oh, very much so. Yeah. Yes, biochemistry and my bioengineering experience working for a biotechnology company, and all kind of wraps in.
So now in your lab, you get to taste stuff instead of just stirring stuff together.
Yes. Okay. Yep. I get to put things together and see what the results are and do taste testings.
Okay.
Mix this and mix that and see how it comes out.
Well, let me ask you then. You just recently won an award for your wine, your 2013 wine. Did you keep extensive notes that you can reproduce what produced that great wine?
Well, I did. I had made a... kind of a fermentation winemaking outline first, and then, of course, I expanded that with copious notes as I was going along. Yeah. Being a scientist, you gotta take notes. So.
Copiously, yeah. Yeah. That'd be a good name for wine. This is a glass of copious, yeah.
I think there is a wine called copious.
Oh, it sounds Greek, doesn't it? Must be a Greek
wine. It's a California blend of something. It's something like that you would never expect a wine to be named.
It'd be like that wine called Miscellany, then.
Yeah, right. Okay. And the Miscellany is even a closer name. See, in the United States, you can name your wine anything.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the labeling laws are rather relaxed.
Yeah, every time we bring up wine, Dave is a wine expert, too. So we get David and Don in the same studio here. And my task is now to keep them on task, which is to talk about dinosaurs. Don and we talk about evolution and creationism. It invariably involves disagreements. There are, in fact, I'm looking at this article now on the Institute for Creation Research, and it refers to a certain kind of scientist as secular scientists. Shouldn't scientists be just scientists? Do we have to separate them into Christian and otherwise?
Well, that was imposed by the secular scientist.
No, it was. Okay.
Who
wouldn't
divided
you know it? Yeah.
Creationism, creation science, into a separate category. It wasn't done by the creationists, that's for sure, or the creation research scientists. It was done by the secularists and those that work many of them in major universities. So that's where that kind of came from.
Well, you categorize your adversary, and then you herd them all into one corner so you can lob shells at and make them a target that way. I think when you give them a name like that, you can do that. I just soon call it science, and I hope that it's practiced rigorously on both sides of the philosophical fence here. Don, you ran we talked with Mark Armitage and had him on the air just a few weeks ago for the second time, and he's planning a new expedition up to the Hell's Creek Formation in Montana, which is where he found a triceratops horn, took it back to the lab in Southern California and found soft tissue. Now, you were just mentioning off the air to me a few minutes ago that apparently a lot more soft tissue is being found than we're hearing about. What's going on?
Well, there's an article in the Smithsonian Magazine recently, actually this week it came out, and it talks about finding more and more soft tissue in dinosaur bones, various types of dinosaurs, Stegosaurus, Iguanodons, Brachiosaurus, the raptors, for example. Mm-hmm. These are different types of dinosaurs found in different places, and lo and behold, they have soft tissue in them, and they can see what appears to be blood cells and blood vessels and connective tissue and various things, collagen fibers, for example. And you know what conclusions they come to?
Somehow it was preserved for 65 million years.
Well, you're close.
Yeah.
They're now thinking that this soft tissue can survive at least 75 million years old, because that's how old their samples are.
Well, it seems to me that that's a reversal of the earlier conclusion, then, that it couldn't possibly be that old, and it was all hogwash. So in an inside-out way, that's progress, you know?
Well, it is. At least they're saying that, well, this is protein, and this is DNA, and this is definitely some type of structure left in these dinosaur bone fossils that we're finding. We didn't think that this material could last that long. We thought, maybe a couple of million years, but not 75 million years.
It seems they had at least two choices here. One, they could have said, that soft tissue can last 65 million years. Or they could have said, well, obviously, dinosaurs are not all 65 million years old. And they chose the other way, the proteins and soft tissue can last that long, in order to avoid ruffling their feathers.
Right. In order to avoid the obvious conclusion that these samples are not that old, which I found rather amusing. I mean, first of all, I didn't really expect them to in the Smithsonian, magazine to say that, oh yes, these samples must be young sample, because we know that this soft tissue doesn't last that long. But now they are saying, well, yes, it lasts 75 million years, and we can use these to look at evolution even closer, because we can see, are dinosaurs really, related to the birds, or the birds related to the dinosaurs? And we can look at these structures now, these internal structures, and, not only from a phenotypic type, the bone structures, but we can look inside the bones and look at the parallels to animals today, and connect and make a stronger case for our evolutionary story.
That article you were looking for in the Smithsonian Magazine? It's in the same issue that says global warming is hooey.
Well,
I think it's the same article.
It's that is of course it's hooey, but anyway, I found that it's a short article, and it's we can make it available to the readers so that they can look at it, but. Folks are now, they take information like this from the Smithsonian, because it's a reputable scientific institution, after all, and it's located in Washington, D.C., so we know that everything that comes out of Washington, D.C. must be correct.
Certainly, that's what D.C. stands for, I think. It's definitely correct.
Yeah, there you go. So folks will now have some ammunition against the young creationist to say, no, these samples have just been around all that time, and the material has been preserved. Now, they don't say how soft tissue is preserved, and make no claims as to any type of mechanism that would have them be preserved for that length of time. Bone is not a material that's not, I don't want to make a double negative here. Bone is porous. So oxygen is going to be, flowing in and out of bone. Microorganisms and all of this stuff that Mike talked about, Mark talked about when he was on the program several weeks ago, all of that is going to be available to these samples. And so it's hard to figure out why this soft tissue would even be around, for that length.
And again, just for listeners who may not have caught that conversation with Mark, we're not talking about fossils here. We're talking about actual bones that have not been fossilized. And so there's a tendency to confuse fossils with bones, but in this case, it was real bone material. And in Mark's case, it was the Triceratops horn. And in the interior of that horn, he found soft tissue, and as have many other scientists. But the short on explanations as to how either that material could be 65 million years old, or And there's a great reluctance to say, well, maybe dinosaurs were younger here. Now, there's another article on the Institute of Creation Research, or Institute for Creation Research page. It's called Dinosaurs in Marine Sediments, a Worldwide Phenomenon. This is by Dr. Tim Clary, an article. And he's talking about, again, the Hell's Creek Formation in Montana. How is it, Don, that we can find dinosaurs and ocean animals, marine animals, all buried in the same place, in the same rock formations?
All buried in the same place. Well,
yeah. I mean, and not even on the coast. I mean, this is Montana we're talking about here.
Right. This is in Western America.
Although these congregations of both marine animals and dinosaur bones have been found in spots all around the world. So it's not only Montana, but they mentioned specifically the Hell's Creek discoveries.
Right. And how can this be? Is this a rare event, or is this, we know that, Montana, maybe it was covered in water at one point in time, especially after the glacial period. And that water had to go off somewhere. Mm-hmm. And so these poor dinosaurs got trapped in this inland, would have been fresh water, wouldn't have been salt water. But the marine life, the fish and the various things that they find are not necessarily fresh water. And this is the paleontologists will say, well, yeah, there were fresh water at that time, but now the sharks are obviously salt water. Mm-hmm. And so you find things as, as sharks and finned, type of marine life, which we only find in the oceans. And so you either have to, again, draw a wrong conclusion and say, well, obviously these species of marine life that we're finding were not from the ocean, but were freshwater, and they just happened to be trapped in the same, sediment.
Well, in particular, they mentioned coelacanths, and there are fossil remains of this old fish, the coelacanth, in Morocco, for example, found in layers with dinosaurs. But to apply that argument, that was a freshwater fish, belies the knowledge that we have now that coelacanths live at 500 feet depths in the ocean, and they're not freshwater fish. They don't go into river systems and so forth. So to assume that coelacanths back then were freshwater fish seems pretty hard to swallow.
Well, it is, but yet they'll hold to their story, because these certainly we don't have a mechanism. We, meaning the end quote, the secular secular scientists, don't have an explanation as to why that particular or those type of creatures would be intermixed with dinosaurs, for example. In this case, it was a Spinosaurus, in Morocco. Coelacanths, as you mentioned, are live at 500 feet. They live in caves, along the coast, and that's where we find them today. And it wasn't too long ago when we said this is an extinct species. It's an old fish that evolved into they evolved into lobefish and eventually walked on land. And so there was a lot of speculation about the coelacanths. Well, they wound up finding them pretty deep in the ocean, in these caves, and they say, well, we've got some living dinosaurs. Other than saying that, well, no, this fish has been around just like all the other fish since the beginning of creation, which wasn't that long ago. I mean, only 6,000 or so years ago. And of course, you're going to find they're going to be around if they didn't go extinct. But instead of making that connection, they say, well, these we've got you know, a dinosaur, a living dinosaur. So that creature alone would give, you know, pause to saying that, okay, a marine, this is definitely coming from the ocean, and it's not coming from a freshwater, you know, river or stream that happens to be right next to a dinosaur when it dies. And then, of course, you know, we have millions of years of sediment on laying on top mm-hmm. of this dinosaur, and they both get fossilized at the same time. Just the whole story of how these animals get trapped, you have to really make up a fairy tale that, you know, just doesn't make any sense.
Well, it's far-fetched to think that that could happen. What is the creationist explanation?
Well, it's quite sound in that the global flood explains these things quite readily. And not an ancient global flood. We're not talking about 75 million years ago. We had this great flood that, it was all over the face of the earth. But we're talking about a recent flood, about a little over 4,400 years ago. And the reason why you're seeing, both... dinosaurs, if you will, land animals and sea animals mixed together, is because it was a catastrophe. The global flood was a catastrophe. You had, as we've talked about before, you've had continents drifting apart. You had massive tsunamis that caused these massive layers of sediment to be laid down over continents. The same type of layer, we find in Americas, for example, and we find them in Europe. And how could they be so large and contain this similar types of materials? And and you've got the cliffs of Dover, the White Cliffs of Dover, for example, which is made up of all kinds of sea animals, but yet even in that you find dinosaur bones. How is this possible unless you had a major catastrophe that mixed everything up, and these animals wound up, being trapped either in mud sediments or in the limes, shells and other debris from marine life. So the flood explanation is a much better fit for what we actually find geologically, paleontological findings fit the global flood model much, much better. And even the soft tissue we were talking about before. The soft tissue, I mean, it's not too hard to imagine that soft tissue within dinosaur bones, for example, would still be preserved after, 4,000, 5,000 years. I mean, it doesn't take much imagination to see that we should be finding this soft tissue all over the world. And the more we look, the more we find. So the time frame is off for these folks, as well as the explanation as to how these well-preserved, in many cases, dinosaurs this marine life can be intermixed, and you don't have to come up with a crazy explanation that, well, there was an inlet river, mm-hmm. for example, that was in this area, and so when the dinosaurs died, they died with the local fish population.
Hmm. How do the guys with the white lab coats that read Secular Scientist on the breast pocket there, how do they explain the sediment layers, or do they?
Well, the typical explanation is that this happened over millions of years, and the different sediment layers, of course, are different periods in our history, you know, rather than looking at the different layers, sediment layers, as let's say, you know, different particle size, different velocities of the mud that was being carried by these massive tsunamis that were hitting the seashores, the coastal plains, the coastal areas that got pushed, thousands of miles inland because of the size and because of the trauma that was occurring. But they typically say, well, this, you know, this happened over millions and millions of years, and it was a slow deposition of sediment. Then something happened to change, and then we get a very, thin layer, let's say, intermixed with these multiple layers. And, of course, now we've got to explain that. And they say, well, you know, something must have happened that laid down that particular thin layer. And then they've got another thick layer on top of it. But the layers are explained as eons of time, and you're looking through the past, whether it's a Cretaceous era or other types of areas eras, as opposed to no, this is just the result of one massive event. And maybe there was different tsunamis or different, for example, when the water receded from the earth, let's say when the earth started to warm up and the glaciers started to melt, well, we get such things as the canyons, here get your Grand Canyons, mm-hmm. and the various canyons that we see, and the canyons being carved out of clearly soft sediment at the time, and it wasn't wasn't rock, it was a relatively soft material. And so massive amounts of earth, dirt and sediment being moved by this water that's rapidly melting, and multiple many catastrophes, many floods, for example, because you get a wall built up, and that stops the water for a time, and then that breaks through, and then you get another rush of water that carves out a little bit more, and you can go to the Grand Canyon and see these that it's not just one massive event, but several events that took place over a relatively short period of time. That's the key.
So does secular science then deny a global flood, regardless of era?
Yes, mm-hmm. Very much so. I mean, even though we have evidence all around the world of some major catastrophic event. So they deny a global flood. They misinterpret the various layers, sediment layers, in terms of eons and of time. And of course, they search for the rocks with the right profile as far as the radioisotopic dating. And they say, okay, you see, we got this rock that is 35 million years old. That's the right date for that particular layer. Mm-hmm. But right next to it is another rock that dates at 2 million years, and they'll disregard the one next to it and just pick the ones that are appropriate that
fits
for their
presuppositions. We should do another program on both carbon dating and radioisotope dating, because we haven't covered that in a while, and it's interesting to learn that those procedures have leave a lot of room for doubt in various ages. Let's do that in an upcoming conversation here. Let's go back to some of that that we've covered it, and I've got to let folks know we've got 3 years of conversations here with Dr. Don on creation versus evolution and science and faith issues, and you can find them all on the website brokenroadradio.com. at the top there you'll see the podcast tab. Click on that, you'll see Dr. Don's name, and if you click on Dr. Don's name, you'll see a chronological listing of all those conversations. You can select one by topic and download it or listen to it right on the site there. And we've learned a lot from this gentleman over the years, and look forward to learning a lot more. But I think maybe it's time we took another look at those dating methods, don't you think?
Oh, we can most certainly do that. That's that would be okay. That'd be a good thing to do.
All right.
Here's the difference in thinking. You know, it's one of uniformitarianism in saying that what you see today, the processes that you see today have always been in place. And so we can look in the terms of radioisotopic dating, for example, we can look at the decay rates of certain isotopes, and we can assume that they were the same eons of time back. In the same way with the sediment in these various layers I was just talking about, that those we see the deposition rate today and we assume that that's the same that it was a long, long time ago. And how can you make such an assumption, especially when you see all around us evidence for a catastrophe or multiple catastrophes?
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Dr. Don is down in Garden Valley, Texas, just 80, 90 miles east of the Dallas area, and also a member of the board of Creation Moments. And I should mention the Creation Moments website. That's creationmoments.com. You can link to it from our site at Broken Road Radio, and you'll discover huge libraries of DVDs and blog articles and other articles and links to things that talk about the young earth creationist position, and not just philosophically, but there's science there, and science that's largely ignored or just disregarded and seldom repudiated because it's not dealt with. As we've been talking about this morning, there's some valid questions here as to how marine animals can be found buried together with dinosaurs that have not received satisfactory answers from these so-called secular scientists, which would mean the large institutions that deal with this thing, things like the Smithsonian and universities and private laboratories. They're just unwilling to deal with this information. So the first reaction, and forgive me, Don, if I'm repeating myself here, but the first reaction seems to be to ridicule the other people, the other side, rather than taking their science and saying there's an error here or there's an error here or maybe that, hey, we're convinced by this. You've done good scientific work here. That doesn't even seem to come to the surface, which is a little frustrating. And it's one of the reasons we do these programs with Dr. Don, to help get some of this information out. We're not taking sides. We're saying, here's the information. You'd look at it fairly, rationally, and decide for yourself. Young Earth or old Earth? Creator, designer, or accident? Which makes sense to you? Don, thank you so much for dropping by. It's good to have you along every week.
Well, thank you very much, and it's always fun, and it's my pleasure to be able to co-host this with you.
Okay, well, and again, this conversation will be in podcast form in an hour or two on our website, and you can click on it, maybe share it with folks who would have an interest in this particular topic. Don, have a great week. We'll see you next week, okay?
Okay, very good.
Stay warm, so warm and dry in Texas there.
Well, the dry is a question.
As it is here.